This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big queue. This deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose. Taco, 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 taco. This deal legit. Taco, taco, taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland. You got, oh man,
that's right,
Corey Majors. And the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, how we doing today? Welcome to the program.
Doing great. I would like to update the world.
About Carter and stuff?
Oh.
Freeman?
Man, I thought about doing an introduction for Carter Freeman, and I was like, I feel like I'd be overstepping if I said it like that.
All right. He looks furious with you already right now, and I don't know about that, man. We still need a Carter cam just for his reaction.
Agreed.
He's like, give me a mic, and I get it. But the Carter cam is phenomenal.
Also, he's like the emperor sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Well, he'll give you the thumbs up or thumbs
right.
down.
I ask him a lot of times. Yeah. Now, the update is going to be the name of the dog now. We have decided on a name.
Did you?
The dog has decided on his name. It is Kodak. So we will now call him Kodak Blue Majors.
Hold
I'm not
on.
Sure if blue's going to stick.
Hold on.
But it is Kodak.
What was the dog's name before?
Kodak was his name with the foster family.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the deal. The kids were like, let's just keep it Kodak. And we were like, all right, like let's put this to a test. So we wrote down all the names that we had come up with that we liked, threw them into a hat, shook mm-hmm. the hat. We were going to Avery and going to ask Avery to draw the name. And before that, Adrian was like, hey, look. And she put the hat down by the dog's face. And he reached in there with his nose and pulled out a one piece of paper, which was amazing in and of itself.
Yes.
And he pulled it out. And we were like, well, I guess we should go with that one. He chose it. So he pulled out Kodak. And that's what it is now. So we got Kodak Blue Majors. And I'm still trying to force the blue thing. So that's where we are at this moment. But there we go.
Why do we give animals middle names?
I don't. No, I mean, should I have given him two middle names?
No, because then he'd have no middle name.
Mm. That'd be two middle names. They would be the two middle names no. in between the first and last name.
No.
Mm-hmm.
The middle is just that space.
When you do
in between the two
median,
middle names.
When you do median with four, what's the median? Mean, median, mode, and range.
But I said middle. So none of those questions
are applicable.
It's the same
thing. Middle and median mean the same thing.
Oh, my God. It is not the same thing.
All right. So, yeah, that's how I am today. Things are going really well. Looking forward to Stars. Getting rocking tonight, baby. And some Rangers. Hopefully we can get back to scoring runs before the ninth inning. And then, you know, maybe this Cowboys OTA will give us something, too.
All right. You know what? Let's actually start with Cowboys, because I want to discuss something that I feel like it's been transpiring ever since the Cowboys made the trade for George Pickens, and I appreciate that. But you've really seen the talk pick up in the last couple of days. And so what I want to know from y'all, as well as from the Tolos, Frankel and Frankel, injury attorney, text line 877-881-1053. Do Cowboys fans buy into the notion that both CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens are number one wide receivers? And I want to make it clear before anybody gets bent out of shape. I think George Pickens could become a number one level wide receiver. But the idea that he is a number one receiver now, I think is preposterous.
Was he the number one receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers last year?
I don't think he was he?
He had 103 targets, 59 catches, and 900 Ooh. Yards.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Now, again, he does...
Who's throwing him the ball? Yeah.
Yes, that's definitely a thing. But also, they use him on a lot of go routes because that's where they feel like they can get
sure.
huge chunks of yardage. Sure. Plus, they also feel like that's one of his best things. Now, will the Cowboys use him differently? Hopefully so. But he was... technically their number one receiver last year in yards, right, targets, and all of that.
But so, not a real number one.
And when you say number one, you're talking Justin Jefferson.
No,
you're talking
not really.
Jamar Chase.
See, not really, because there's a big gap between like going right to the top of the line and nobody thinks George Pickens is a top 20 receiver in the NFL.
Oh, no, yeah, I agree with that. There are there 32 top number ones?
Yeah,
there,
I don't know, not necessarily. But I would just say, like, to
like
be...
Are there that many good quarterbacks? I mean, everybody has to have a job.
Definitely not.
They need a quarterback to fulfill the role.
Yeah.
At one point, I think Ronnie Brown was a quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. So was he a number one quarterback?
But, like, okay, let's use this example, because we talked about this player last week. He's not Ladd McConkey. At least not yet.
Okay.
And so... I understand. It really would make no sense from the Cowboys' perspective if they showed up and they were like, oh, yeah, well, he's not good enough to be a number one. Like, I understand that that wouldn't be the case. And I understand that they're just hyping the team. But that's what I wanted to know from y'all,
yeah,
from the fan base. Do you think this is a situation where we have two number one wide receivers right now? Not will we get to that, because I could see the possibility of that. George Pickens is clearly going to play with the best quarterback of his career. You could see an elevation. But right now, what do you say?
From the 214, there's always a hierarchy. If Randy Moss and Jerry Rice lined up together, there's still a 1 and 2. These guys are too soft to accept it these days, don't want to hurt each other's feelings. And that's maybe that is CeeDee Lamb going, yeah, man, he's just as good as I am, and welcoming him into the
right
fold, like that part of it. On plays that you line up, if you go... These guys are interchangeable, and you line up and you're like, hey, on this play, CD's the one. On this play, Pickens is the one. And you do it that way, which I don't think the Cowboys will do. I honestly don't. Like, they've said this before, and then it just turned out Amari Cooper was the number one. You know, like, they've said stuff like this before, and it just turned out that way. CeeDee Lamb is a different receiver than George Pickens by far. He is an elite receiver at this point.
Yes.
George Pickens has not made his way into elite receiver status.
You know what's funny? Don't you still think there's like, I don't know, 10-15% of people out there that think even CD is not a number
one? Yeah, you put CeeDee Lamb on any team.
I agree.
Maybe not the Vikings.
Yeah. We'll see about the Bengals.
Maybe the Bengals. Like, that conversation is, I think all of those teams would want that receiver if they had a chance to have him. So CeeDee Lamb, I'd put him in that top three category of best receivers out there. George Pickens, not at that point
yet.
So if you're asking me what I feel, no. Do I want the Cowboys to have that ability to say, I mean, remember when they had Roy Williams and T.O. and Terry Glenn? They had three number ones. But Roy Williams was like a number four.
Yeah.
And T.O. was a number one, you know, essentially. Terry Glenn had a really good year that year. But the Cowboys, if they, again, if they said, on this play, you're the first target. On this play, you're the first target. And they abuse defenses like that. We'll have this conversation again and we'll go, yeah, the answer is yes.
You see, and that I can definitely go along with, because I think it was RJ Ochoa who put out the list of multiple 1,000-yard receiving seasons for the Cowboys. And I think you could absolutely see that. So obviously there was a big gap between Pearson and Hill in 1979. Then you go all the way till 2006. And then because of potentially more talent, but also because of the changing nature of the game, you see it a lot more. 2006, Owens and Glenn. 2007, Owens and Witten. 2009, Austin and Witten. Same in 2010. 2012, Bryant and Witten. So one of the things that you do notice, of course, there is that's the tight end going all over there. But from the 1979, 2006, and 2019, those are the three seasons you had where it was wide receiver, and both got 1,000 yards. And I do think that that is possible, but I think it's anything but a guarantee.
Now, the 901, A.J. Brown's better. I don't agree. I think A.J. Brown's a fantastic
CD?
Top seven receiver for me. Like, I absolutely think that A.J. Brown's phenomenal. And it's just a difference in taste. You know, like, that really is splitting hairs in that conversation. But look at their field. Don't they feel like they can go to Devontae Smith at any point? He can pretty much beat any cornerback on the field. They feel like he's a number one.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it at times when they're just like, this game, this is the Devontae Smith game. Not because A.J. Brown's double covered, but because Devontae Smith's on fire right now. So we've seen this before with those with that team. But the other thing is, A, their offensive coordinator uses them that way. And B, their quarterback can get them the ball in that way as well. So that's where I look at that team, and I do see, I think there's still a hierarchy. There is a A.J. Brown's one, Devontae Smith is a close 1B, but that's about as close as I think it is right now. And when it comes to the Jerry Rice, Randy Moss conversation, Rice is easily, he's easily the one.
See, I agree with that. I know Reggie will get really upset, but even in that comprehension, like I could see how they're both number ones. Like, I get that. And I saw somebody say 1A and 1B. And I just right now, I think that that's
I think
just
it's defined a, 1-2.
Yeah, I think, exactly.
There's no other number two on this team, that's for sure.
Exactly. And so, like, I think a second round pick who has never had more than 65 catches in their career and one time got to 1,000 yards, I think has the potential to get up there for sure. And that's why they don't want to sign their contract, because he's like, I get to play with the best quarterback of my career. All right, let's go. But you can't just take that for granted.
The 940, y'all make too big of a deal out of about receivers being one. QBs throw to open players and open spaces, not to number ones. It's not me. George Pickens wants to be a number one, yes, because he wants a contract, yes, as a number one. That's CeeDee Lamb has his contract as big as it is because he knows he's a number one receiver. Number two receivers don't have the leverage. Number two receivers don't get that big of a contract. Number two receivers land on other teams because they're not number one receivers. It's not necessarily us. This conversation is with them, their agents. They know what they want. And you know what? Most of these guys have been the best receiver or best athlete on their team from the moment they stepped on a football field all the way until they got to this level. And they believe that's why they're divas. They say it. They know it. They believe that they're the best on the field. They believe that they are number ones. That's where that conversation really starts.
And I don't really agree with that assertion whatsoever that nobody cares who's the number one. You throw the ball to who's open. Part of the way you get defined as a number one is either A, your ability to get open, or B, the fact that the quarterback knows they can throw the ball to you even if you're not open, because you'll get open or you'll make the catch regardless. So I actually, like, I hear what you're saying, Corey, for sure, but I don't actually agree with that assertion whatsoever. I think you look at the Chases and Jeffersons of the world, and if you want to throw St. Brown in there and obviously CD, I think part of the reason they're number one is not always because they run the best route. It's they find a way to get open, or even if they're not open, you're like, he'll catch the ball.
Most offenses are designed for their number one receiver to be the first look.
Yes.
Like that's what the offense is designed to create. Now, again, if your quarterback is very good at going through his levels and going through his reads, he's going to find the open receiver. If your quarterback isn't that great at it, he's going to force it to a number one a lot of times. Now, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, that was a connection that was much like Michael Irvin and Troy Aikman. It was ESP. They knew what those two dudes were doing with each other. So that's another, but most offenses are designed.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's mensteaclinic.com.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big queue, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco, 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 taco. This deal legit. Taco, taco, taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99.
And that this is the guy that's going to be the workhorse. This is the guy that's going to be the bell cow for the offense as a wide receiver.
Some other NFL news this morning. Albert Breer is reporting the vote was unanimous. This is one of the things we brought up. I think it was yesterday. Maybe it was Monday. That you'll be able to declare an onside kick at any point in the game. Remember when they changed it up? Mm-hmm. They were like, you can only declare an onside kick, or I think Steve Crow with bankruptcy, in the fourth quarter. And now you can declare it at any point in the game. And then the other thing that they're going to do is, the cover guys previously had to be at the 34 when you kick the ball off at the 35. So now, revolutionary change. All the players can go to the 35. They can move up 1 yard in hopes that perhaps it will improve the recovery rate by the kicking.
They want that. So the NFL does want more of these, or I'm trying to figure out what they want.
I think they do, because I think they saw the percentage was like, I don't know, less than 1%. And they're like, hey, what if it was like 3%? So it's still not very likely, but at least there is a significantly better chance that you do get it. So we've talked about some of the rules changes. And by the way, noon o'clock segment, you got to tune in because Corey's furious about some cowards and the rule changes that they pulled off the table. But onside kick, unanimous vote per Albert Breer. You can now kick an onside kick as long as you still declare it at any point in the game. And the cover guys can move up from the 34 to the 35.
The most important part, though, is you do have to go up to the referee and say, "I do declare." You have to, like that. And you have to fan yourself because it's warm on the field.
Yeah, in your wool suit or whatever that's definitely all white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No,
Not like Steve Carell, not like Michael Scott. I declare, you have to say it the other way.
See, that would be the most interesting thing about Bill Belichick ever coming back to the NFL. If they're like, and you have to wear a suit like an old Southern person. I think he'd be like, no, I'm going to stay in college. That's where I recruit my girlfriends. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we will talk with Dallas Stars TV host and analyst, Emmy Award winner, and the man who knows everything about hockey.
All of it.
It's Brian Ray, next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan right now. Dallas Stars TV host, analyst, Emmy Award winner, and the man who will find out if he knows everything about hockey. It is Brian Ray. Good morning, sir.
Gentlemen, happy game day to you.
We are to the conference finals for the third straight year. Tell me that Edmonton is good, but I don't have to be worried because I know they've won 8 of their last 9 playoff games, and the only one they lost was when they gave up a goal with 0.4 seconds left. So I'm a little concerned.
I will say this. When we get to the final four in the NHL playoffs to go Game of Thrones on you guys, I do believe all four teams have a legitimate claim to the throne.
Ooh.
That's how tight it gets when you get to the final four. So,
Even Carolina,
even after last night, it may not be the most legitimate claim, but it gotcha. Is a legitimate claim to the throne. So all four teams have a legitimate claim. So yes, it is not going to be an easy series. There are things to be nervous about with Edmonton, but there are things to be excited about with the Dallas Stars. And I think looking at this series, if you go back to last year's matchup, I think on paper, entering that series last year, you could say Dallas had the better goaltending, Dallas had the better depth, and Dallas had home ice advantage. This year's series, on paper, Dallas, I think, has the better goaltending, and they have home ice advantage. The question mark is, can Dallas's depth start to put their best foot forward the way Edmonton's has through the first couple of rounds of these playoffs? That's the biggest thing I'm watching in the first couple of games of this series.
And, you know, when you talk about the goaltending, Skinner is a tough one to figure out because you'd think, hey, obviously we have an advantage because he got benched. And then he came back and threw back-to-back shutouts. And I feel like he's a wild card in terms of I feel significantly more comfortable with what I'll get from Ottinger. But I'm a little worried that Skinner can just show up and be like, no, yeah, I can be awesome too.
That's the frustration and the jubilation of someone who's a wild card. Because, yes, you have a more, I'll say, established sample size. You know what you're going to get when it comes to Jake Ottinger. Stuart Skinner could absolutely implode. We've seen him do it. But as we saw last year in the conference final, he can also put together his best series of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm with you guys. I have no idea what to make of Edmonton's goaltending. But I do think if you're Dallas, once again, if that depth can start to push forward, now you're forcing Stuart Skinner to be a great goaltender shift after shift after shift, as opposed to getting a couple of waves on him and then you sort of pull back, and getting a couple of waves on him and then you sort of step back. So it's similar to Mackenzie Blackwood for Colorado in the first round. Dallas needed to force Blackwood to be great, and he kind of plateaued as the series went along. I think it's the same thing with Stuart Skinner. He's more proven than Blackwood in the playoffs, but if you can force him to be great on a regular basis, you know, force him to win this series for Edmonton, essentially.
Yeah.
If Dallas can do that, I think you take your shot.
Okay, when you've been watching with this group of guys, I think the group is kind of Marchment, Duchesne, Ben, Sagan, Robertson, that kind of group that you're talking about that we're hoping gets that next level. Which one's been right there, almost right there to, like, it looks like he's about to crack it open?
it's Duchesne for me. And I will admit, I've been saying Matt Duchesne's name for the last few games of the playoffs, that they need a goal from him.
Hey, so do the officials. The officials say Matt Duchesne's name a lot too.
Yeah. But when I was watching the last three games of the Winnipeg series, 4, 5, and 6, you know, he hit a post on the power play in 4 or in 5, or and then he, they're actually in game 4. I'm getting my God, it feels like it was 7 games, but it was only 6 against Winnipeg. My gosh, it felt like game 7 in that last game. But he hit a post himself in game 4. He set up Seguin on a beautiful play in game 5. Seguin hit a post. You know, in game 6, he had a couple of dangerous looks. And Hellebuyck was fantastic for Winnipeg. When a player's in a slump and he's not noticeable, that's a player who's cold. But if a guy is in a slump and he's starting to look dangerous, he's starting to have some really close looks and it's just not quite getting there for him, I'm okay with that. That tells me he's close to getting something across the line. And I do believe at this point for Duchesne, when that first puck goes in and he gets the goal to break the goose egg, I really do think it's going to open the floodgates a little bit for him. Hopefully it's tonight. It would be the perfect time tonight to get into this series with a new team and a new matchup.
Our friend Brian Ray joined us here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Kevin yesterday, as he tends to do, forced us to make a decision on Pete DeBoer. If he's a great coach or a good coach.
I think you're going to disagree with me
on
this.
And in the conversation, it was really nitpicking at what, you know, the definition of that is. You've been around Pete DeBoer. You've seen how he talks to his team. What in your mind makes him such a good coach and the right coach for this team?
So you'll hear a lot of players talk about his message being very direct, and his message is not – there's never too much information. He seems to give players, let's take his game 7 record, you know, the 9-0 record he has. He essentially gives his players, call it 2 to 3 pieces of information to focus on, and then gets out of the way.
Yep.
You're not getting into the player's head. You're not confusing them or overtaxing them with information. You're giving them a couple of directives to focus on, and then you turn them loose and let them go. So I think that's what makes him a very good head coach in the NHL today. And then for me personally...
Hold on, can I just pause real quick? Because you're giving a great answer and you just hit on a specific phrase that we talked about. Very good. Does he need a cup to make him a great coach?
You know, if we're going to talk legacy, I think we live in this world where, you know, you look back on history, and yes, the players and the coaches who won championships, they seem to have a bump up than the coaches who don't win championships.
It's reality,
so it's kind of one of those, you know, let's look at it this way. Is Marv Levy an excellent football coach, or is he a very, very good football coach?
Yeah.
I think if you ask anybody in the NFL world, especially a coach, they would say he was excellent, but from a fan perspective or a legacy perspective, he's an excellent head coach who just couldn't quite get that championship. Peter DeBoer has, I mean, he's been to the Final Four, I think I
eight
saw
times.
Well, get this. This is even better. He's been to the conference final 6 of the last 7 years, and he's been fired twice in that span.
Wow.
So there's it's weird when you put into perspective of how life is as a coach in the NHL. If he gets his Stanley Cup, he is going to go down as an excellent all-time coach. I really do think he's that good. But for whatever reason, whether you think it's fair or not, it does feel like getting that championship does add a defining legacy to a player or a coach, even a general manager. I mean, Jim Nill, we were talking about it yesterday. They do the general manager of the year voting after round 2 of the playoffs. Like, is he going to three-peat? As the general manager of the year?
Yeah, I hope so.
but he's won a Stanley Cup, but it was an assistant general manager in Detroit. He's trying to get his own Stanley Cup as the architect, as the general manager. So, yeah, there could be some legacies on the line, but I think when you dive into the nitty-gritty, you also look back and you go, these are some really, really smart hockey people that are driving this thing for the Stars. So I will say this, to answer your question, I think Peter DeBoer is a great coach. If he gets a Stanley Cup, he starts to enter the excellent all-time historical conversation as his career continues to move along.
I like that. Now, one of the things that could obviously propel the Stars through this series is, I think it's safe to say we all feel significantly better about the special teams than what you saw last year in Edmonton? Because you could make a big argument that that was the deciding factor in that series. How do you feel about the Stars special teams going into this series?
So after the depth scoring, that is my number two question mark for the Dallas Stars because of exactly what you said. You went 0-for last year against this team in your conference final matchup. I think the special teams are in a good place. I think the penalty kill is in an excellent place. You're going to deal with McDavid and Draisaitl and their power play. The Stars will give up some power play goals in this series because that's just unavoidable when you play this team. I think for the Stars on the special teams side, you don't necessarily have to outscore Edmonton when it comes to power play goals, but don't fall into the black hole. Let your power play get a couple of timely goals for you. It's really the timeliness of the power play goals more than anything and not necessarily just pumping them in left and right. Can you find a way to get a timely power play goal? Because if you do go 0-for again like you did last year, that becomes a problem. But also, it's a very good penalty kill on the Edmonton side. So I wonder about somebody like Mikko Rantanen in this series where, as excellent as he has been, Dallas did not have literally a moose. They did not have a moose like that on their power play last year. They had Joe Pavelski, who's very good at tipping pucks, but they did not have just a behemoth of a human that can take up space like that on the power play. That's where I wonder if we can feel Mikko Rantanen's effects for Dallas in this series. Can he get them some power play goals?
And we're also just starting to see the surface being scratched of him on the ice with Miro on the ice too, which can be a very unique asset to Pete DeBoer as he goes through this. I think I heard Razor recently say, there are a lot of Rays in the Stars organization, by the way. I think I recently heard.
But there's only one Razor.
that's true. But he said, you know, last year that they in the series, they had five defensemen and wore them down to a nub. We were discussing yesterday, do you think they'll go with seven or six, or do you think that they have a different approach with the defensemen here?
Well, I do think last year Dallas ran out of gas. I think going through that Vegas series and that Colorado series, it just really took a load onto especially the blue line. But by the time they got to Edmonton, I think going 11-7 the last couple of games of the Winnipeg series, it does help. I think seeing Miro Heiskanen clear 20 minutes in the last game against Winnipeg is a good sign. I would not be surprised if we saw 11-7 in one of these first two games or tonight. Well, it's one of those, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But I think the defense is in a better place in terms of health and minutes this year than they were last year.
Good.
And now the key matchup here is how many times can you get...
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's mensteaclinic.com.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big cube. This deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco, 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 taco. This deal legit. Taco, taco, taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99.
Miro Heiskanen on the ice when McDavid is on the ice. You can control that on home ice, but you cannot do that when you go to Edmonton. So that's if you're looking for a one-on-one matchup or an X-factor matchup, what does McDavid do when Miro is on the ice with them? Because as good as Miro has looked building through the Winnipeg series, now he needs to get up to the Miro level that we all know. Now he needs to completely have the accelerator down to try and work 97 as best he can.
Now, you were talking earlier about some of your key factors in the series or some of the unknowns or X factors. For me, it is, and I know it hasn't cost them yet, but the Stars have scored the first goal only three times in their 13 playoff games. I realize they're 5-5 in the other ones, but only three times. And I just don't think that's going to fly if you consistently fall behind against Edmonton.
You're probably right. Look, there is a historical statistical number that says when you score first in a hockey game, you win more than you lose. the strange thing is, I think what did Edmonton do? They rattled off six consecutive comeback wins,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
In the first. So is this the series of who doesn't want to score first?
Maybe. Maybe so.
It's to go full cliche, maybe that doesn't matter because both of these teams have had the comeback gene in them. I just think at this point you have two really good hockey teams that do not get flustered when the other team gets the first goal, gets the first power play, gets some type of an advantage that tilts momentum in on their side of the ice. These seem like two very good teams that know how to collect and respond whatever happens to them on the ice. And the first goal, that may be a difference maker, or it may mean nothing because of the way both of these teams can respond. I'm with you. It could mean something. It could mean nothing the way these two teams have gone in the playoffs.
This feels like it has the potential to be a long series. What's your prediction?
Oh, you know, I'm not coming on your show and I'm not picking against the Stars.
Yeah, my prediction for your prediction was going to be Stars in seven.
50.2% to 49.
Look, I would not be surprised if it goes seven, but I'll say six.
Ooh.
Let's go Dallas in six.
Let's see if
Stuart Skinner can have the magic repeat that it did last year for the Edmonton Oilers. Let's see if he can do it again.
How neat would that be to end the Canadian hope on Canadian soil as awesome. They know that their cupless streak will extend to 33 years?
That'd be great.
I have many Canadian friends, so I'm not going to take that bait from you guys because I don't want to feel the grief from them. But I will say Peter DeBoer has had the best answer in a press conference of the playoffs this year. After Dallas beat Winnipeg, somebody asked him about being conflicted of being a Canadian native, but ending, you know, Canadian playoff runs. And Peter DeBoer looked at the person in the press conference and said, hey, at this point, I'm finished.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Love it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, good sir. I'm sure we will be talking with you again sooner rather than later. Appreciate all the insight.
Enjoy the games, fellas. Good to talk to you.
Yes, sir.
There you go. Ryan Ray right here on 105.3 The Fan. Ooh, Dallas in six.
Dude, I'm pumped, man. I'm pumped. That conversation got me all riled up for tonight.
All right, let me throw it out there. Dallas wins this series in six games or less. There's no way I do not believe they will win the Stanley Cup. I don't care if Florida sweeps Carolina. I will not change my mind. Coming up next, though, it's time for Baseball Nuggets. Do any Rangers fans change their mind and maybe regret this trade? Next on The Fan.
Luis Angel Acuna, and he drives one out to left field. That goes Wilson. He takes a look, and it's out of here. Luis Angel Acuna with his third home run in his first 24 big league at-bats. And the Mets go in front 2-1.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We'll get to Nuggets in just a minute, but more NFL rules news this morning, and this one, a little surprising. The vote to get the tush push banned has failed. And the reason why I say it's surprising is not because I think it should get banned or anything like that, but the voting on this, or excuse me, the betting odds on this. Yes, the tush push would get banned was minus 400. So it was a huge favorite. And then you heard last night and this morning that there were multiple committees that recommended it get banned. And then supposedly Roger Goodell, I think, wanted it to get banned. And Alec, you told us the vote's in and not banned.
Yeah, Jordan Schultz says that it is not going away in 2025. And he did follow up and say it looked like at least six teams had flipped from no in the last conversation to yes, banning it. And they still didn't get enough votes to get this thing out of here. So it's going to stick around.
Wow.
Dick Butkus must be rolling over in his grave right now thinking about this. Just like, I can't believe they're trying to ban something that just gives another team an advantage.
He would just be sad at current football, right? Like, probably. Anytime there's an unnecessary roughness flag, he'd be like, get the hell out of here.
Did he just tap that quarterback's helmet and got flagged for that?
Yeah. Right now, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. It's time for Baseball Nuggets, and I want to start with that audio we just played. I think the answer is no, either way, but we were talking about the Rookie of the Year voting for the American League yesterday. In the National League, it's a significantly closer race, but number four on the list is Luis Angel Acuña, former Texas Rangers prospect. He has started off the season pretty solidly.
Most people thought you were still talking about Cole Reagans, and I think he just went on the 15-day injured list, by the way.
Which, he's
really good, though.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that, but it's the same thing with Acuña, is I wonder how many people look at that and they're like, look, you won the World Series, so I'm okay.
All right, line me the trade up. What was the trade again, Kevin? Acuña for a bag of buckets. Is what I'm thinking? A bag of buckets.
It was for Max Scherzer.
Okay.
Look, I know Max Scherzer didn't do a lot, but remember how much you barely made the playoffs. Do you take a couple of those Scherzer starts away and you don't win them, and now you don't make the playoffs whatsoever?
Also, if you remember the picture of Scherzer celebrating the World Series afterwards, and he's got the champagne all over his face and he's screaming like a madman, like that was exciting. Or maybe that was the ALCS. You can't have that picture without it. You know, you can't have that guy who I think was very valuable in the clubhouse too.
I agree.
More than anything else, like he is the ultimate, I think Mike Maddox used to refer to it, the apex competitor. And like that, you won't find anybody as competitive as that guy. That's why he keeps going out there and hurting himself.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, no, I still got it. And you're like, no, you don't. And he's like,
and they're like, you got to slow down.
He's like, said the hell I don't care I what you think right now. I'll punch you to get out on the field. And so I think he would. So no, I don't regret it because that team won a World Series. And when you do that, you have to think about the future loss and you make that decision then. I'm willing to do this now for the now.
Yeah.
And that's what Nico's done.
Okay. See, I was ready to proceed ahead, but then you tried to derail the path. I'll say the same thing about Reagans. He goes on and wins the Cy Young, like, good for you. I feel like he got his opportunity and it just didn't work out here. Acuña is different because he was just a prospect and you hadn't really like given him the opportunity, but it got you a piece that I don't think you win the World Series without. So
yeah,
he can go win Rookie of the Year or whatever, and that's fine. I'm okay with it.
And if he turns out to be, you know, one of those all-star players multiple years in a row, like that's what Mike always lined up, right?
So be it.
All-stars are the kind of the status for it. Then that is, hey man, the Rangers did a good job in their scouting department. So let's have more faith that they can go find another one of those.
Do you think that Team USA should go ahead and get this done? Gunnar Henderson said he would very much like to play for Team USA in the 2026 World Baseball Classic.
So would I.
Corey. All right, let's say you can, man, I think you're going to answer this selfishly.
Mm-hmm.
Only you or Gunnar Henderson can be on Team USA for the World Baseball Classic.
Go ahead and answer it for me, Kevin. What do you think I'm going to say?
You're going to pick yourself because you're going to be like, we got a lot of good players. I don't care if that guy was runner-up for MVP or third or whatever.
Dude, imagine the show. I'm doing the show from where are the Olympics this year?
Okay, first of all, it's the World Baseball Classic, not the Olympics, okay? So I'm already concerned about putting you on this team.
Look, man, I don't have to focus on what the game is. I just need to focus on where the game is, all right? I show up, I hit baseball, and then we go home and win, all right? Like, that's what it's all about, Kevin. I don't need to know who the teams are.
You don't have to do jack ass on that team. They're not going to ask you to do anything on that team.
If I hit bombs, then it's okay. No, for Gunnar Henderson, that would be an exceptional addition to this team for sure. Yeah.
All right. So,
but if he's so good, why does his team stink so bad? This is very similar to the Devin Harper, Ace Bailey conversation.
You know what? That is fair. He is not playing as well to start the season as he played the last 2 years. He's freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, they're just in a weird place right now as a team overall.
So yeah, I think he. I believe he will. Get the invite. I'm going to go out on a limb there. And
really?
Say he'll get the invite.
All right.
Let's talk about Aaron Judge.
You should cupcake bet Sean with that.
Oh, yeah. He always loses those bets. He says he's 1-1. That's not the way I remember it. So Aaron Judge hit the shortest home run of his career yesterday. Alec Medford, how long do you think that home run was? Aaron Judge, shortest home run of his career. How long do you think the home run was?
Shortest home run of his career. I'd say, because it's Aaron Judge, it still has to be something kind of ridiculous. So maybe like 389 feet.
327.
It's 207 feet.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was about to say, I don't think that's possible.
No, I'm just kidding. Corey, this is a good thing it's not Price is Right, or this answer would have broke your heart.
Oh, it went 326.
It is 326 feet. Now, that is still amazing, and we're not playing Price is Right, so I'm incredibly impressed.
And that's in their stadium?
Drew Carey would be disappointed with the work that you did. But yeah, 326 feet for Aaron Judge, which, look, he still hit a home run. I think he's hitting 403 so far this season, so nothing to be ashamed about. I just thought that that was an interesting little footnote there.
330 Citizens Bank Park is the shortest porch, I do believe. But that's not necessarily a porch. I'm just trying to figure out what the shortest distance in all of baseball is. But 327 was the number that I always remembered, but it was 26 is the number.
At least 326.
There we are at the moment. 310. Oh, Fenway, 310.
Yeah.
To left and 302 to right field.
Yeah.
So, okay. He hasn't hit one to right field yet?
I mean, he probably has. It's just been, like Alex said, too far. And yeah. They're like, well, I mean, look, I actually, you know what I was about to say? Well,
point, Alex.
That doesn't count, but I'm sure nobody in the clubhouse is being like, hey, did you try to hit less of a home run? Like, I'm
not
sure
a
they're
single
like,
person.
Yes. By the way, Walker Buehler, and we'll probably talk more about balls and strikes as we go along. Walker Buehler came back from the IL and got ejected in the third inning because he was furious with what he thought was terrible officiating and umpiring for balls and strikes. Got the boot, much like Bruce Bochy.
How's he doing this year? Because after that World Series with the Dodgers, I was like, oh my God, yeah, he's going to be unstoppable.
No, yeah, he's
4-1 with a 4 ERA and 33 Ks.
Yeah, he's doing solidly. Going on the IL obviously slowed down the progress at this point, cost him a couple of starts. But yeah, no, he's doing solid.
All right.
For the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk Rangers, Yankees. Plus, in honor of this series and the Boone brothers, what did you dominate your sibling at? 877-881-1053. We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's MensTeaClinic.com.
Taco to go, taco to, and a big Q. Taco to go, taco to go.
We just need you.
Quick Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose.
Taco to go, taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go,
$2.99.
Taco to go.